What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
All right, we'll get back to Browns, but I wanted to get this back out there. So we started off the show with this earlier today. Anthony Dolan, he keeps receipts, everybody. Guardians have won 22 of their last 30. They are right in the thick of everything. They're a game back of the wild card right now. They're 5.5 back of the Central Division. Detroit got rocked last night by the Chicago White Sox. They're reeling. They're getting nervous over there. Jim Costa in the morning show up at 97.1, the ticket. They're getting worked into a shoot over it all. And Lima said, well, who's going to give credit? Are people going to take their statements back of what they were making during the 10-game losing streak? Tone, come on, make your case.
Well, I want to be clear. They haven't accomplished anything. I mean, my God, they're surging. They have the best record in the American League over the last 30 games. They are 22-8. They have won 8 of 9 series, and now that they got that win in game one of their Marlins series, they're off to a great start. They could very well, you know, win 9 of 10. That's what it was going to take. They didn't necessarily have to sweep everybody like they did the Mets, but they just had to chip away. Owen had noted the schedule, and as bad as it was, and it was, we all buried them. Let's be honest, most Guardians fans, even the biggest, the Dairy Brothers podcast, which we've had both of them on our show plenty of times, and they have their great podcast hosted by Odyssey. Okay, they had pretty much buried them. We had all done it. The good news is there's so many games that, hey, you know, as long as you admit it, and I admitted it, I admitted that I buried them, but they're not the same team. They're not the same team. And you are seeing, even with the slumps of Jose Ramirez and Stephen Kwan, and it was great. Hopefully Jose broke out of it last night with another 2 home runs. Awesome to see, but you're seeing Manzardo continues to tear the cover up the ball. He is, you know, hitting for more than just singles. Like you're seeing the ball sprayed around a lot. And then you've got guys that I think in that bullpen, it'll never be what it was last year. That bullpen was an all-time bullpen, but they are starting to adequately get situated in their roles. You've got a new closer. We're not talking about, you know, the guys that aren't here. We're talking about the guys that are here. And the starting pitching rotation is going to be good enough to give them a shot to not only make the playoffs, but to hold their own against anybody in the postseason, maybe except the Milwaukee Brewers.
Okay.
The way that they're playing.
Well, okay. So you've made a hell of a case here. But I think the initial Guardians fan is going to say, because the initial Guardians fan is probably a Cleveland sports fan altogether.
Yep.
And when you go to, say, the Guardians cast, remember, they said, it was Matt who said if they traded Stephen Kwan, he's done with the Guardians until they sold the team, until the Dolan sold the team. Nothing's been done yet, which you said. You also said you were one of the people that buried him. Yeah, but you're also one of the people that came to a vigorous defense of what the Guardians have done. And over the last decade plus, you've been right. I think people were arguing about this year, though. Now, that's just me just going over what's happened over the last couple of months. What?
It always seemed to me like the people that came out of the woodwork to scream at the organization, to scream at the Dolans, which we've all taken our turns doing that, but it seemed like pent-up frustration.
But it's because it's double-edged.
From 15 years of them owning the ball club.
It's double-edged because they've always played well enough just to make the general fan really, really mad. When it comes to baseball, I mean, there's plenty of fan bases right now that don't give a bleep about their favorite baseball team or what they consider their favorite baseball team right now. I don't think Orioles fans give a bleep. They're ready for Ravens season. They've been ready for Ravens season, especially when they were supposed to be a team that was supposed to compete for a World Series to a lot of people this year. I don't know if I can find A's fans anymore because that ownership has successfully killed that franchise. Nats fans have certainly moved on to where they're at right now. Pirates fans, I just used all those teams before because the Pirates are such an easy pickings when it comes to it. So there's plenty of fan bases that have just moved on. The Guardians have always played well enough to make people care, and then to make people care, but to make them just angry enough because they don't go all the way in. Well, what's all the way in? We've had that's been a moving target. And so I say it's like, well, you can't do champions pose yet. Because if they don't make it back to the ALCS, you're going to hear a lot of the same frustration.
I'm agreeing with you that they haven't accomplished anything yet to sit there and do victory laps. If anything, the only thing that I would victory lap is the sentiment that this team was not like trying to win. They were, you know, joke of a baseball team and organization. It's like they're allowed to have a bad stretch. And that's what they did. They had a terrible stretch.
Well, there were some that thought they were like losing on purpose, which no.
Yeah. And, you know, I also think certainly, yes, I'd rather have Emmanuel Class A here to fortify that bullpen even further. But given all the news and the locker clean out, and, you know, the guys have been tight lipped about it, but I think behind the scenes, and you'd hate to have to get there for this to be the case, but I think it has galvanized them. I think that story and the way people are talking about this team, and they heard a lot of what you were saying during that losing streak, and nobody wanted them to lose 10 games in a row, but I do think it galvanized them. And I think that they're using that to help spearhead what hopefully will be a second half of the season to remember. And so far, they're on the right track. And I do think they are starting to scare some other teams that are ahead of them.
Well, they are making their run. It's also that you have to differentiate ownership from the front office and team. I think that I could stand here at the end of the season and look at what they've done. And if they don't get to the ALCS, you know, these things happen. But say they got to the wild card. Say they got to the ALDS and they lose. Okay, there will be people go, well, they didn't get to the ALCS. They had a chance to get better. They got worse. This, that, the other. But hold me to this. Record this. I don't put it on Antonetti and Chernoff as much as I would ever. And the team itself. I told you this, and I still believe it, and I will believe it. What they accomplish is in spite of ownership. The ownership, for the many reasons that they give, or excuses that they give, have had to tear away from the organization, have had to tear away from the fabric of the team because of money. So they give that reason or excuse. So I will say you have succeeded in spite of your ownership. The front office, I think they would have loved to have just paid anybody they want to make the fans happy and to go out there and try to get a World Series. You only have so much money to work with. Now, there is criticism of some trades, but as you brought up, the Josh Naylor trade starting to look a little bit better. I know that the Emmanuel Classe piece with him basically maybe being done with baseball forever when this month is over, for crying out loud, which we will find out more by August 31st, if I'm not mistaken. But his career may be very well in shambles at the end of this. Well, that was the end of the Francisco Lindor trade. It didn't go very well for us. All right, that's part of it.
That sucks because they were about to trade him, and they were going to get something
exactly,
for him.
Exactly. Like. But we were sitting here grinding over Stephen Kwan's salary when other teams would probably there would definitely be some back and forth on whether it's between $20 and $30 million a year, but they definitely would have tried to come up with something that would have worked for everybody else. But there have been positives here this year. You mentioned the pitching. You mentioned the rotation or the bullpen. You mentioned Kyle Manzardo as well. If Kyle Manzardo finishes this year with 25 home runs as a not everyday player, I think that that's certainly going to be a plus, and you need to make him an everyday player now.
What's funny is, and I know they traded
in 2026.
And I know they traded Shane Bieber, but isn't this so typical of the Guardians and how they've had to do business over the years and how they always find a way to get themselves out of the position to where they're going to be an afterthought, like, say, the Pirates. By the way, we had Pony on, and we did not rub in his face what happened to Skeens last night.
Got smashed.
Holy cow, did he get smashed.
I don't think he's been very good historically in Milwaukee, against Milwaukee.
They rolled last night. That team looks like a juggernaut right now. But leave it to the Guardians to be in a situation where, regardless of what happens, come playoff time, and you're right, if they miss the playoffs, if they lose in a wild card, if they lose in an ALDS, hell, if they lose in the ALCS, we're going to get people talking about the spending and all that. And then what are we going to do in the offseason? It's going to be genuine excitement about Manzardo, Kayfis, Bezzana, and we're going to have good pitching because they do all the time. You know, they're going to have a good bullpen all the time.
You don't want to know what can kill
all
that.
They're going to be, well, I know what's looming.
What can kill all that.
I know what's looming.
Yeah, I hope you do.
But here we go again. They're going to be positioned again to be a really good team next year. And I think there were some people in town that wanted them to bottom out to teach the ownership a lesson. And
that
and that is not happening under this organization's watch.
That's a lesson they won't learn.
They are not going to bottom out. They're too good. They're too proud. And they have too many good people within that organization to allow it to happen.
Even if they were bad this year, even if they finished up like Pittsburgh, or even if they finished up, who's the, even like the White Sox winning 44 games is unconscionable. I'm not going to bring it. What if they finish like the Twins? The Twins are going to finish under 500. They're right now 7 games under 500. If they finish like the Twins, that's still not going to teach them a lesson. Because they'll say, well, for the last 20 years, we've done this throughout this entire time, and we've made the postseason all these times with our payroll, and we've been able to figure it all out, and that's not going to teach them any lesson whatsoever.
Now, their bottoming out was like 2023, 76 and 86. That's their version of bottoming out, right? Like that's
yeah. Well, and they sold real pieces that year.
Yeah, they did.
And they kind of quit the last month of the season. That was more of a let's bring the kids in and let's see what they got for 2024.
And then there was years
and then
ago.
And what happened the following year?
And then they went to the ALCS.
They get a new manager, yeah. They go to the ALCS.
I want to say it was Francona's first year, but I'm probably mistaken, where they looked like they were going to make a run. Then there was all the injuries. They were going to make a run of the postseason. Then there was the Francisco Lindor first year where you made the argument about him being brought up.
That was 2015.
Okay. And then the last real bad year you had was Manny Acta. I mean, it's been a long time. So if you're hoping, if one of the people were hoping for a bottom out, of all the things I've disagreed with you on when it comes to the Guardians in 2025, that I have to totally agree with you. If you think they're going to learn some sort of a lesson, there's no lesson they're going to learn. They're going to go, no. You need to learn your lesson. Look at how successful we've been here over the last decade plus. That's what they're going to say. You can be as mad as you want, but you know damn well it's true. I can be dissatisfied and mad, but I also know it's true. And I will say front office, team, manager, and Stephen Vogt was not good during that 10-game losing streak. Not going out there and getting yourself tossed when chances you could have to get these guys going.
We were
especially after Jose got thrown at and was out. That you can't do that. You had to go out there and do that. That said, I differentiate completely between front office, team, manager, and then ownership. They are in two separate categories.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Good news, the Rangers losing today, which means the Rangers are behind you in the wild card spot, but that does give you some cushion here, even as the Yankees and the teams ahead of you have kind of still stayed a game ahead of you.
Yeah, you know, and the Rangers are in an interesting spot in general. I mean, if we get in a series with them, for instance, and I think we play them, 7 times before the end of the season? They have 2 starting pitchers we're not going to be able to touch right now. And in particular, I know Eovaldi got roughed up a little bit in his last outing, but he's been incredible this year. They're not very serious right now offensively.
Yeah.
It's like an interesting little thing because they have so many batters and so many great hitters on that team, but they really aren't doing much offensively.
So it's been kind of weird because Texas teams you think of, mostly, I mean, historically, great offenses, and then they've had just enough pitching.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there was like a 10-year stretch where if a great pitcher signed there, you could guarantee they were going to, it was like Kevin Millwood, they were going to fall off the face of the planet.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, I really am not, I'm really not sweating the Rangers.
Now they've lost 6 out of their last 7. It becomes easier to kind of push them to the side. When they acquired Kelly at the deadline, I genuinely got a little fearful. He's been nothing more than a 3 or 4 for them anyway.
Yeah.
Like, again, they, in any rotation battle they have, they're going to be able to win that out because their top 2 is so strong. But they're a little bit of a paper tiger right now.
I'm really not sweating any of the teams. Maybe this is just a greater statement on the rest of the league.
Yeah.
There's just not a lot of teams that I look at and I'm all that concerned about. Now, in fairness, I don't think the Guardians are a juggernaut either. But this feels like one of those years, and it's not just in the AL. This feels like a year where like 85 win team will win the World Series.
Sure.
And we're all going to kind of go, well, that happened.
We talked about the Rangers a couple years ago when it was the Rangers and the Diamondbacks. That was a 90-win Rangers team against an 84-win Diamondbacks team.
I know the Blue Jays have been lights out. There are good teams. But like even with the Blue Jays, I don't think they're as good as their record is. The Phillies might be one of the few teams that are as good as their record is. But like, I mean, how many teams above 600 are there in baseball? I don't think there's anybody. No, there's one team. It's the Brewers.
Oh, yeah, and the Brewers have been playing outstanding baseball, yeah, obviously, as of late.
What's the winning streak at? 11 games now, I think. 12.
12?
Yeah.
It was 11 or 13 in my head. I was going back and forth, and I was like, I don't know which one they just got to.
All right, not because we know Dan Menigan's a big Brewers fan. There's a part of me that if this was the year that the Brewers won a World Series, I could kind of get behind that.
Because the year just kind of feels very blah?
Well, no, I mean, Milwaukee hasn't won.
You come around to my Mizorowski takes?
No.
Oh, okay.
Not the Miz kid.
You don't like the Miz kid. It's all right.
I kind of love the fact that Murphy took over and the Brewers have gotten better.
You like him because he keeps a pancake in his back pocket and eats it on television.
You say that like it's a bad thing.
I say that like that was the most endearing thing anybody could have ever done for you personally in that moment.
It would have been a steak or bacon. I mean, if he had bacon in his back pocket and then brought it out and ate it like jerky, that would be...
I don't know who the announcer was that it was interviewing him, but the fact that she ate part of the pancake too, very problematic as well.
Yeah. Trisha Whitaker with Apple TV. She was the one that was doing it.
You know, she's very talented, so she just went for it
in a way that somebody takes a pancake out of their back pocket, I'm not going for it.
I'm not you. You're a father.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got things to live and die for.
You think Trisha Whitaker's got nothing to live and die for?
I mean, she's a young, single woman of the times.
Is Trisha the one that we interviewed while she was going through the airport? Is that Trisha?
Yeah.
That's her?
Trisha is single-handedly... I mean,
she was definitely down for it.
She has single-handedly been one of the three best baseball interviews we've done on this show. And there were some times where I was worried that interview you're specifically referring to was going to be one of the three worst ever. Just because, she mentioned the going through checkout like 10 times.
She kept going back for it.
Yeah. But it's just like the pancake.
That's a commitment to the bit. I just don't know that I have.
What if Elise has a pancake in her back pocket? You're not eating that pancake?
I'm not eating back pocket pancake.
Booty pancakes?
But especially not booty pancakes from just a manager of a baseball team. He was sitting on that for nine innings.
Well, you don't know it was nine innings. It could have been a fresh cake.
You think like the game ended, he went down there, got the fresh cake, threw it in the back and said, this is what I'm doing now. I got to do this interview.
And that once my interview's over with Trisha, by the way, I kept it warm.
It feels like too much like Michael from The Office almost to just keep food in your pocket.
I don't really see a problem here.
I never keep food in my pocket. Are people keeping food in their pocket and I'm just living in the world that thinks nobody's keeping food in their pocket?
If you're the only manager in baseball with a .633 winning percentage, I would say you can keep food in your pocket.
Also, I couldn't justify even putting it in like cargo pants or something, but I feel like cargo pants is like if you're going to put food in your pocket, maybe you do. It's a baseball uniform.
Yeah, pancakes are like indestructible though. They're like Keith Richards.
Yeah.
Like think about it. Like, I mean, other than like just breaking apart, like once you actually get the syrup on there.
Yeah.
If it's just a raw pancake.
It was raw pancake. It would have been more impressive if he actually had syrup that he just kind of brought out.
I thought you meant he had the syrup on it in the pants.
A little Aunt Jemima bottle or something like that and just kind of took it
like
out.
Like a travel bottle?
A travel bottle of syrup. Well, if you're going to be carrying pancakes in your pocket, you might as well have travel bottles of syrup.
You just dap it up and then... I like the way you're thinking here.
You know, I mean, why not?
What will it take you? What will it take to convince you the Guardians are a playoff team?
I need to see like a month more of this. What they've been doing for the past month where they've been the best team in the American League. I need to see them do it for about a month or so.
See, I don't need to see a month more of this. But I do need to see like 600 ball. I mean, they're playing like 800 ball right now. Like 600 ball in their next 30 games. Because I'll tell you right now. Within the division, you got one team ahead of you, and then you've got the three teams ahead of you in the wild card. All four of those teams aren't playing 600 or better ball over the next 30 games.
Yeah.
So if you get, I think if you keep there, which again, the offense can regress a little bit. The starting rotation can have its ebbs and flows as long as, you know, three out of the five starts on any given week, you're getting these quality performances from any of these guys. Yeah, but I do think it's about 30 games. And again, they've got like 52, 53 left. So you're not even asking for the whole breadth of the season. But it's just, to me, it's more just, I need, that would double the amount of time you've played really, really well in the second half. It still doesn't beat the 90 games you played like hot garbage or the 10 games you really were stink.
Yeah.
But at least then, like 60 games is enough of a sample size saying, even if there's still more regression offensively to go, we're evening out with what the starting pitching's doing.
I mean, it's at a spot right now where I believe in this team in any given night, which for a stretch there, that was not the case. But I worry so much about the offense. And I mean, the Santana thing is the most confusing to me out of all of this, Nick. I don't know what you do in this spot with Carlos Santana. I really don't. He's a veteran. He's earned the right to be up there, but he is just not able to hit the baseball at the moment.
Yeah, what's kind of crazy about this, about the Santana thing is Manzardo has fulfilled the prophecy of what he was supposed to be when you traded for him for Aaron Civale 2 years ago. Like, you've got another power hitter that's consistently going deep. And I get, like, he does play a lot because he's playing against righties, but I just don't understand. Like, I know Santana's got a hell of a glove. Yeah, glove's going to ebb and flow. Defense doesn't kill you the same way if your offense is good enough.
Mm-hmm.
The Manzardo, I kind of think, okay, 30 games, continue to play, you know, 580, 600 ball, and Manzardo's got to crack the everyday lineup. I understand the math that Steven Vogt's trying to play with. Okay, but that math should come out of Santana, David Fry, yeah. Nolan Jones, that not... Not Kyle Manzardo. At
no,
this point.
That's when the math is just bad right now. And we got enough players on this team that we can kind of pinpoint the people that should and shouldn't be playing. But we've been yelling about him now for so long. I just feel like we're yelling into the void.
216-474-0092. What will it take to convince you this is a playoff team from the Cleveland Guardians? I would like to point out this is a minuscule complaint here.
Okay,
it's not a complaint against the Guardians. I'm not old man who hates interleague play. It's fine. It should not happen after the trade deadline. I think August and September, I just have no juice against the Marlins.
Mm-hmm.
Ian, the Marlins could take this series. It's not going to change the way I feel about this. The Braves could take the next series.
Your Marlins into the Braves is the problem.
Like, it's just, why the hell are you playing NL East in the middle of August when you've got so much? And it doesn't even have to be just teams you play. I'd love to do some sort of flex scheduling where you play more against the teams you're competing with. Yeah, that's fantasy land stuff. I know that's not going to happen. But can I just get AL here? Well, AL in the second half of the season?
Yeah, I do think it hurt. When they went from 19 to 13 games in the division, it does. I mean, obviously that's six games versus each team in the division. You're just going to feel like you're playing other teams more and more and more. The problem that I have is that ever since they moved away from that, like the old couple that used to create the schedules together,
yeah.
I felt like that old couple, when they did it, they had like juice and an understanding for, oh, we want to see the best teams versus the best teams, or at least the best matchups and the rivalries in the important spots. Now, I'll give the Guardian schedule makers, the computer that put it together for this one, some credit in the idea that at least we take on the Tigers six times in the final 2 weeks. But like last night, I looked up and I was just trying to find like weird quirks. The Blue Jays don't play a single game against an AL East team in August. They have just three games left against each of the Red Sox and the Yankees. That race will be played out not on the field, but on the scoreboard. And like, it's little things like that that just makes no sense for baseball.
I mean, look at this.
It's easy to get that right. How do the Blue Jays not play a single game against an AL East team in the whole month of August?
You go Miami, Atlanta, then Arizona on the road. And then, of course, you have Texas, Tampa, Seattle, Boston, Tampa, KC, Chicago, Detroit, Minnesota, Detroit, Texas to finish out the season. That would be another thing. I would like a little bit of flex scheduling. I know that this is going to be an easy, I don't want to see the White Sox again. I wish we could do some, okay, it's almost like the play-in where it's like the month of September. If you're a team that is actively trying to not win,
okay,
you play other teams actively trying to not win.
So they have to, well, that's hard because then you have to like predict out the schedule ahead of time and you have to,
a month out,
you have to put them in the, okay, so you want,
we've known the White Sox were going to stink far longer than the last month. But yeah, at the end of August, you go, all right, these teams are, honestly, if you're mathematically excluded from the playoffs, get bent. Okay. A month full of Rockies versus White Sox.
Okay, so we won't care at all about the 13 games that everyone has to play in the division against each other. We're just going to, we'll toss that outside the window.
Yep.
And then we'll recreate the entire month with what we believe to be best races.
Or just fill in. Like, all right, that series against the White Sox there, the September 12th through the 14th.
Okay.
They're now playing the Rockies or the Pirates or one of the other bum-ass teams, and now you're playing
How many flex
the Rangers?
How many flex weekends? Yeah, we play them 12 million times. How many flex weekends are we doing here?
Well, I don't hate teams this, by are the complete way. Booty stank.
I don't hate this, by the way. I really do. I truthfully do not hate this. And it works as a punishment for the teams that stink, and then also rewards the teams that are close and fighting, and then we kind of let the battles play out. It would be something that baseball's never going to go for. On the probability scale of this happening is a 0%, but I love the thought process of it.
But like, it starts with no NL East in Cleveland in damn August.
Because like the least, here's the thing. We should have fewer teams than ever, at least it appears that way, that are just straight up out of it, not in contention, not doing anything, right? Like, we know what those teams are. It's the Angels, it's the A's, it's the White Sox, it's the Orioles at this point. And like, that's really about it. It's a few number of teams that are just not trying to do anything. But I like the idea of punishing those teams.
Yeah, I mean, if you have right now, there's two teams in baseball that have a negative differential of more than 100. It's minus 148 for Washington and minus 326.
We call it the diff line?
Yeah, the diff. Ooh, I like that.
The diff
line. I like
line.
That quite a bit.
Yeah, if you're not above the diff line, you then get relegated to the teams that suck category.
But yeah, I mean, if it is such a statistical long shot that you put any actual chase to bed, get the hell out of here. Why am I watching you?
I do like this idea. Baseball.
It'll never happen.
No.
But we love it.
Think about it. Baseball's got to find a way. If you can manufacture better storylines, closer races at the end, and this would be one way to do it.
And by the way, it would also combat the whole this season is too long thing if the entire month of September was just good on good.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. Like, outside of that six-game stretch against the Tigers, the Guardians, even in the middle of a race, is going to have a hard time convincing people that those games, each individual game, has a lot of juice. Like, think about this Marlins game tonight. We'll watch it. We watch everything. But playing the Marlins isn't that fun.
If the biggest story in baseball is already come and gone, does it even matter? That's in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
I'm Jeff Phelps. We're going to talk a little Guardians coming up in just a second. Browns finished their practicing in Philadelphia today. Again, you go all the way to Philadelphia and you practice one day for about an hour and 35, 40 minutes. And then today about an hour and 15. Really? Okay. Josh is buzzing around in his car. Hi, Josh.
Hey, what's up, Jeff? Andy?
Hey, man.
Hey. I just wanted to give you my opinion on the Dylan Gabriel hate.
Yeah.
I think that, honestly, with Andrew Berry's drafting since he's been here, it's been subpar. I think everybody feels that way, whether it's right or wrong. And to be honest, the buzz was Jalen Milroe was going to be his guy. And when the Seahawks took him a little earlier, and all of a sudden we draft Gabriel, it seemed like a panic pick. And everybody's been baffled. I mean, and then you try to give a good attitude towards, like, hey, you know, they're professionals, we're fans. And then you find out on most of the NFL execs list, he wasn't even in the top 15 on anybody else's radar. So to me, it's an extreme reach for Gabriel. And then you get Sanders, who's obviously showing that he is a first or second round talent. I mean, we don't totally know that yet, but the guy hasn't gotten that much attention in practice, and he balled out in the first preseason game. So you just got a lot of, you know, you try to have a good attitude towards it, but in Dylan Gabriel, all you hear out of practice and preseason, I went to the first preseason, he looked terrible. I mean, he was misthrowing balls, looks like he's totally overwhelmed. I mean, it really makes you question just with the eye test. I mean, obviously, I'm not an NFL scout, but as a fan that's watched, you know, football since childbirth, he doesn't look like anything special. And the fact that he keeps getting all the attention and the Browns propaganda machine keeps trying to put out, yeah, Dylan Gabriel. Browns fans are kind of sick of it because
I don't know that it's propaganda, but I understand what you're saying, why you think it's propaganda. It's not. The proof is what they're doing in these practices. Yeah. It's not. I mean, it might sound like propaganda, but the reality is if I can see it, it's real. And what we're seeing is they're giving him all the opportunity in the world to be in a good position.
And it's not working so far.
I guess. I don't know. I'm be honest. I listen to a lot of people talk about.
Thanks, Josh.
Thank you. I listen to a lot of people talk about what they're seeing at camp, what they're not seeing at camp. And sometimes the room looks different to other people. And some people see things that are successful and some people see they don't. You want the proof? The proof is when they play a regular season game and we're all watching it together. How many years have we gone out to camp? Jeff, I can't tell you how many times I've gone out to camp and go, man, that guy doesn't look very good today. And then the person next to me would be like, are you kidding?
I mean, phenomenal.
You know, they were supposed to chip there and they slid. I mean, that was the right call and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh, all right, well, maybe I'll look at this differently. And so I'm not discrediting any of our friends in the media. It's just everybody sees things a little bit different and you've got to kind of do work if you want the truth. And maybe it's depends on how big the playbook is. And maybe some guys work better with a smaller playbook. Some guys work better with a larger playbook. But I think that in the NFL, these coaching staffs all think they're gigantic. Kansas City's probably, Andy Reid is probably the only one I ever look at and think, I don't think he thinks his football players are brain surgeons and that they've got to know all the end all be all. Like, I see his offenses. Sometimes they look kind of simple, but they look smart and like they have common sense.
Yeah.
And sometimes I think we overcoach this game.
Overcoached, Andy.
Yeah. Does it have to be Bill Belichick and, you know, a regimen and this and that? At the end of the day, it's a game. And I don't know that you need to have 1,000 plays in the playbook.
Here we are in mid-August and your Cleveland Guardians are 6.5 games out in the divisional race behind the Detroit Tigers.
Okay.
Didn't think it was any kind of a possibility that they would catch the Tigers. I still don't think they'll catch the Tigers, but they're 6.5 out. They're one game back in the wild card. How about that, Andy?
You and I both believe
How about that?
They need to be within 3 games to start the month.
To catch the Tigers?
Yeah, because they know they have them 6 times.
I'd say 5.
5?
Yeah. 5, you have an outside chance of catching.
I'll meet you in the middle, 4. How's that sound?
Okay, fine. That's fine. This team is befuddling in a good way. And as you said, we all sit there and we watch sports, and we all have thoughts about sports. And I watch this team, and I just, you know, there's nobody that really, there's nobody offensively who I think puts the fear in the hearts of other teams. I think one guy, and that's Jose Ramirez. Everybody else, I think you can pitch to, and you think you're going to get them out, and they're not going to kill you. And that includes Stephen Kwan. And I like Stephen.
I was super happy he hit that home run last. I don't care what the score was. I just was glad to see that he made good contact, got the ball out of the ballpark. And I still want to give him a couple days off, but
yeah.
They're in a race. So I don't know that you can.
He's my second favorite guy offensively. He's been struggling a little bit. Hopefully that home run helps. But to me, it's been fascinating to watch how this team dealt with that losing streak, then bounced back. You're 15.5 games. And I say it with, would you agree with this? No aspect of this team has been outstanding. I think the bullpen's been pretty good.
Jose has been outstanding. That's it.
Okay. I'll give you that.
It's the only thing I can say has been outstanding.
Yeah. I'll give you that.
Okay.
The rest of it, the guys have just been scrappy as all get out, and they've competed, and they've found ways to win baseball games and stay competitive. And I before anybody yells about money and blah, 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 credit to the organization. Credit to the coaching staff. Credit to the players.
No, you can't say anything nice about that.
They've done a nice job competing. Now, I don't think they have a roster that is built for a big playoff run. Hope I'm wrong. Man, boy, would it be great if I'm wrong on that, and I hope I am. But this roster, to me, doesn't look like a roster that could do anything more than get to the playoffs, perhaps. I can't see them knocking off one of the better teams in the American League. Doesn't mean they can't. Baseball's a weird game. You know, you get into the playoffs, you have a short series. So, you know, you have that chance to do that. But when I look at what's going on, I just think, good for you guys, man. And they didn't quit. They didn't give up. They're working at it. And I think that's outstanding. I am a little concerned. about the rotation while at the same time being optimistic. Tanner Bibee goes tonight. Tanner has to be thinking, the heck am I not doing this year? He's not been bad, but he's not been Tanner Bibee good. You know, Tanner looked like he was on his way to really making that step and becoming more of an upper echelon starter in the American League. And I don't think he's done that this year. He's not been bad, but he's been okay. Gavin Williams looks like the man. Terry Pluto wrote a piece about this today, too. Gavin looks like the man. I was so fearful of what would happen after he threw all the pitches, and he was not good yesterday. Let's just hope he's okay next time out and that the 126 pitches don't affect him in the almost no-hitter that he threw. And my fingers are crossed that that'll happen. But the bullpen's been okay. You lose Clase. The rotation has been pretty good.
Yeah,
you lost Ortiz. And yet here they sit, Andy, one game out of a wild card spot.
There are two times they could have thrown up the white flag or thrown in the towel, any way you want to look at it. Right?
Raised the towel or thrown in the white flag.
That's right. You can look at it that way. You can look at it that way. Yogi's the greatest. That 10-game losing streak absolutely could have stripped that clubhouse of life.
Could have buried him.
Then knowing that you're...
And dropping 15 and a half out, Andy.
Yeah, you're in it. But there's always the thing about that third wildcard team is there's a glimmer of hope. There's a little bit of hope, which might be a dangerous thing. Wouldn't you say that, Dan? Hope sometimes could be a dangerous thing? Okay. Yes?
Maybe.
Oh, maybe. Thank you. I tee you up for your line, and you barely get it past home plate. You dribble
hope
it off.
Is a good thing. Go. Sometimes it's the best of things, and no good thing ever dies.
There you go. Well done. That was about a single, because if he would have jumped in right away, it would have been a home run. And then to be in a clubhouse with two guys that are like accused of committing baseball's ultimate sin.
And worse than betting on the game, you have the ball.
Yes.
And you're accused of doing something to affect a bet. Okay.
So this is where I give Stephen Vogt credit, because it doesn't matter how a front office can tinker with a lineup. It doesn't matter how ownership spends money. When it comes down to it, to have guys not quit in that situation, especially players that know how to play, like Ramirez and Kwan, it would have been real easy for those guys to say, you know, this season's over, man.
And they didn't.
I'm going to stay healthy. And let's just come back and make sure to see what happens. I know the baseball life isn't very long, but let's just see. So this is where I give Stephen Vogt. I don't know how you don't give the manager or maybe even, you know, the other coaches in that room credit for keeping these guys straight. It really would have been easy to just say, forget it, and you could be at the bottom of the Central in 2 seconds.
The situation here, when they expand the rosters, you only expand them by two guys. Mm-hmm. You know, the days of bringing up all kinds of guys are over. So you can bring up two guys.
Do you think that's good or bad?
I think it's pretty good, actually. I don't mind it. They can bring up two. Is there help on the way? I would think no. Travis Bazzana has been up in AAA now for two games. He led off in the first game on Tuesday that he was up there, went 0-for-2, couple of strikeouts. He did walk three times and scored a run. And then yesterday, he hit second. He played second. He got a hit, 1-for-5 with an RBI and struck out three times. So far he's 1-for-7 with 5 strikeouts and 3 walks. I don't need to rush Travis here. Rocchio's doing okay. Schneeman does just fine at second base. You don't need to rush Bazzana here. If he gets hotter than blazes and you think, then he can help you, fine. But I don't need to rush him here. If you're looking for a power bat, Jonathan Rodriguez keeps punishing AAA pitching. He just doesn't do it in the majors. On Tuesday, he was 3-for-5 with a home run, 3 RBIs. Wednesday, he was 2-for-4. He's hitting .318. I mean, he looks like the ultimate 4A player, Andy, or a guy who's going to be playing for the Nippon Ham Fighters sometime soon. But, man, he can hit in AAA. And John Kenzie Noel, last two games, John Kenzie didn't build on last year. He's 1-for-9. Did have a home run in the ninth inning on Tuesday, but he struck out four times. He's hitting .258. One other guy And maybe this is something, I don't know. Cooper Engle, the catcher who is in Akron.
Yeah, I was just going to bring that up, especially when your big league catchers
aren't hitting very well. Although I think Bo's swinging the bat better.
Yeah, I think he is too, with a little bit more confidence. Yeah. But I still, like, when you look and you see that, was he hitting like 172? You're like, I don't have a feeling that he is going to get a hit every time he steps up to the plate.
Engle played in his first AAA game yesterday. 2-for-3 with a walk. That's pretty good. And they had a shutout over Toledo, 2-0. So he caught a shutout in his first AAA game and went 2-for-3. So if I'm handicapping guys to help, I might think it's Cooper Engle.
I would too, especially because he's what? You can never really have enough catchers on a major league baseball team. Yeah.
Yeah. And if you're going to expand the roster, he might be the guy you bring up late. I mean, Austin Hedges is a terrific defensive catcher. We know he doesn't hit a whole lot. Bo hasn't hit a whole lot.
What's Engle hitting?
He was 2-for-3 in his first AAA game, and he was hitting what, upper 200s
upper 200s?
I think so. Okay, yeah. In AA, off the top of my head.
The other guy is Velasquez.
Well, and I was just going to mention, he's played 2 games since getting called up from Lake County to go to AA Akron. Mm-hmm. Tuesday, he was 1-for-4 with a walk, played first, and he hit fourth. Yesterday, 2-for-4 with an RBI, scored a run. He singled in the 10th to give Akron a lead. So,
and they threw him in the 4 spot right away, huh?
Yeah, he's been the cleanup hitter both nights.
Yeah, that's impressive. Yeah.
That's what I thought. Ralph Velasquez, Ralphie.
Yeah.
Keep him in mind. He's a first baseman. Guardians have a left-handed hitting first baseman sitting there in Kyle Manzardo.
But he catches too.
No, he doesn't. He was drafted as a catcher. They changed him into a first
baseman. I don't know why I thought he was still.
No, he's not doing it anymore. Okay. It's what would you do here, folks? You looking down there for help? I don't think there is any. And how good actually is Jose Ramirez? We'll get into it here on Baskin and Phelps.
Willie Nelson, still alive. Generalissimo Francisco Franco, though, still dead.
Still dead.
Still dead. Can't believe I said that about Willie Nelson. Good God Almighty. All you Morgan Wallen fans coming to town. I thought I listened to real country, and here I am. I forgot that Willie Nelson is still alive, still with us. All right, I'm going to get to the Guardians here in a second. First, Lyme and I are going to get to the Guardians here in a second because Lyme had a hell of an argument to give. But I think it's time for a Kafis Corner. Are we putting Mitch on the spot?
What's up, boys?
All right, give us the Kafis Corner after the Guardians won last night over the Miami Marlins.
Did they take another series? This now means they are 9-1 in their last 10 series as they continue their upward trajectory.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Colin Joseph Kafis last night in the Guardians 9-4 victory over Miami had a bit of a tough time making contact, had 2 strikeouts to start off the game, chasing balls in the dirt, had a hit by pitch later on in the game that he took off the back left upper ankle, which is painful. And then in the seventh inning during that Guardians 4 run stretch, he finally got things going with a high chopper that Jose Ramirez hustled out to get to home plate, and that started the rally that got the Guardians the cushion that they needed to take the series against Miami.
Would you call it a Baltimore chop if you were doing play-by-play?
I'd probably just call it a high chopper. I need to know the full definition of a Baltimore chop.
You don't know the definition of a Baltimore chop?
Not currently.
All right, stop listening to the show because I know you don't listen to it anyway, so I'm not telling you to do anything you don't do. And go look up what a Baltimore chop is. It's going to help you out, okay, young man?
On it.
They are 7-3 in games that CJ Kafis has appeared in.
They are what?
7-3.
Have him appear more.
You got to keep him in. Coming up in about last night, Lima isn't thrilled with the Browns over Quinshon Judkins and Isaiah Bond. We'll talk more about that coming up at 7:43 this morning. Lima, you, Anthony Dolan, are right in with it again for whatever. Everybody's enjoying what the Guardians are doing. Hey, you lost one to Miami, but you still took a series again.
Just keep winning
series. Keep winning series. And they're only, a half game out right now? Yankees are idle, so they're only a half game out of the wild card right now. 6.5 out of the AL Central. And Lima, you just had to stoke the fire again yesterday, didn't you?
It got me thinking, during the 10-game losing streak when people accused the team of not trying to win, and you were with me on that. That was silly. We understood the angst over the payroll. We all had angst over the payroll coming into the season. Some were louder than others. I'll admit, at that time, I gave them the benefit of the doubt because I said every year I'm giving their organization a benefit of the doubt because they always, these all these years that I was frustrated with them, they would come out on top. And they would, yeah, they didn't have a World Series to show for it, but, you know, every year 31 out of 32 teams don't have a World Series to show for it. Mm-hmm. So overall, I think everybody would love the track record of the Guardians around baseball that that haven't won a World Series over the last 10 years. Like, if you haven't won a World Series, you've looked at the Guardians as a model for your team doing the most with the least. So when we would bring up about their situation, I had a lot of people in my mentions, this is a few weeks ago, a lot of people in my mentions say, hey, at least the Browns spend money. That gives us hope. And it got me really thinking that I do wonder if there is a segment of the Browns fan base that would rather have the team spend $300 million every year.
The Browns fan base or the Cleveland fan base?
Well, I think one and the same, really. But yes, the overall, the Cleveland fan base, there is a segment of that fan base that would rather spend $300 million every year on payroll because it would give them the hope. Now we have what we need to go to the World Series because we have the money. And lose rather than where they are. Spend $100 million every year, $120 million, whatever it is. Spend that much every year and win, which is what looks like they're on the verge of doing again. It looks like they're on the verge of pulling off, out of the depths of despair, another playoff bid, which is just incredible. When guys like me, I'm guilty of it, left them for dead, buried them again. And most of the city did. And it looked like there was no hope during that 10-game losing streak.
So you're asking people, if they believe there's fans out there that would rather have the Guardians spend $300 million and lose?
I know there are fans out there because they're the Browns fans. Because the Browns fans were in my mentions telling me that at least the Haslam spend $300-plus million.
See, that's the problem I have. Listen, I'm a football guy, but damn it, they're different sports.
Sure.
They're different sports.
But they told me that they have an ownership that's willing to spend no matter what. They'll take that every time than an ownership that isn't willing to spend.
The Guardians are responsible. Like, guys, I don't think tremendously highly of the go for it of Paul Dolan and his regime. But I don't think he's a terrible owner. I think he's a responsible owner. I think he keeps people in his employ. He doesn't make you not care about the Guardians the way that they do in other cities with their baseball teams. So in so many ways, he's a responsible owner. I get mad at him for the crying poor stuff because that seems to be that's been the message from when his father was in charge to when him in charge. It's just always this empty pocket stuff. And it's like, dude, it's pro sports.
And I've agreed with you. The team's been awful.
The team is, I mean, good God, the Browns have gone from $1 billion to like $6 billion in valuation over the last 10 years or whatever the hell it is. You look at what the Guardians are. What are the Guardians worth according to Forbes?
Seen 1.6, 1.7.
I've seen even more. So if you're looking at that going, well, good God, you bought the team for $300 million 20 years ago. So you're looking at a hell of a profit right now. Don't tell me you ain't got the money when you can just sell the asset and give it to somebody who does have the money to do so. But that all said, I've always had to say right after those sentences, yeah, but be careful what you wish for. Because when you get new owners, everybody's excited. And then they start to do the things that make them new owners, which are usually horrific mistakes. And that's not just in baseball. I think that's in every sport.
Yeah, like I think we would have all celebrated had the Dolans sold the team to like Steve Cohen, right? We would have lost our collective minds. And then what would he have probably done after one bad year? Probably would have gotten rid of the front office.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's just how it works.
Yes.
Right? Hey, I'm an owner. I want my guy. I don't care. I don't care that the rest of baseball is envious of the Guardians organization for doing the least.
I can't meet those people halfway. I know if they're just Browns fans and they don't care about the Guardians, then I can't have that conversation. I care about the Guardians. Now, again, football. I care about the Guardians. And I'd much rather have this. I'd much rather be clenching my fists and being really mad at them. I'd rather just be really mad at the Dolans for not spending quote-unquote money than not caring. They still make me care. It can be frustrating, but I still care. It's a competitive team. I'm still entertained by them. So I don't agree with any of that. I'm not saying that you're wrong. I bet there are definitely people who just rather spend their team spends $300 million on players if they don't win. I don't disagree with you fully, But I just think that that's a terrible way of thinking. I think that's a warped mind, man. I don't agree with that whatsoever. You could spend a whole lot of money, and if you were spending money on a loser, especially because I would have to get used to it. Because if you were a Mets fan or a Yankee fan or a Dodger fan, I think you feel like, hey, that's a standard, especially a Yankee fan. Because the Will Ponds, you know, they had problems with the Ponzi scheme. Mm-hmm. What was the guy's name? Madoff.
Madoff, yeah.
They had a problem with that going on, so they didn't necessarily have the funds to do some things after a while. But if you're a Met fan, Yankee fan, Dodger fan, you probably just say that that's a standard. Well, go spend money on anybody else. If all of a sudden Paul Dolan said, we got $250 million to spend this year, I'd be sick to my stomach if this team was where a lot of teams are in Major League Baseball, because I feel we'd never get that chance to do it again. I mean, I cannot tell you the depths of despair. Like, this is our golden opportunity to bring in these players. And if it didn't look like this was going to work, first off, we'd be on the hook for some of these players. I mean, we'd be trying to get rid of some of them, but we'd be on the hook for some of these guys because they'd be terrible. And the other thing is, I don't think we'd ever get to enjoy it again. Like, a Mets, Yankee, Dodger fan thinks that there's just going to be another train coming. Get rid of Cashman. Get rid of Aaron Boone. There's another train coming. Get rid of this player and that player. We'll get more. We'll buy other players. But for a Guardians fan, if you just had, like, if David Blitzer came in and goes, all right, we're going to start with a bang. Here's $230 million. You can spend it on your players. And they didn't get that job done. Oh, my God. You want to talk about depression. I don't know where I'd go with the Guardians.
Well, and it sucks. It sucks having to sit here and talk about a owner like the Dolans who, materially speaking, here in Northeast Ohio, they are rich, right? They are absolutely rich. But we're talking about them as if they are a small business having to run it paycheck to paycheck and, you know, business quarter to business quarter and run it like a business. That sucks. I will say they did. The minute they got the BAM Tech money, they spent it. It rolled right back into payroll. The minute they sold Sports Time Ohio, right, they rolled it right back into payroll. Not in a good way. What, that was the Swisher and Bourne contracts. So I do think if there was an announcement tomorrow that one of the local affiliates was willing to give the Guardians $50 million for the rights, which that is not happening and not even close, which, again, this regional local TV
thing has
disproportionately, you know, impacted the Guardians worse than like the Rangers. The Rangers went from $120 million local TV money to like 50 this year. Okay, the Guardians went from like 50 to 60 to maybe 10. So we've gotten screwed on that. But if magically tomorrow they found another $60 million, I do think they put it right back into the ball club because they do have a history of doing that. Unfortunately, we're in like one of the people keep saying, I saw yesterday, stop calling the Guardians a small market team. And I'm like, guys, in baseball, don't look at population. Don't look at metro area. Don't look at any of that. There's only one thing to look at to determine if you're a big market or a small market, and that's your local TV money. And the Guardians have one of the worst situations going in all of baseball, local TV.
Malone in Lakewood, you're first up on the fan. Hello.
Morning, gentlemen. Morning.
Morning.
I think I would rather the Browns have the Guardians' success, and then I'd rather have the Guardians have had the Cavs' success, if I could wave a magic wand. But I don't think it has anything to do with the money. I don't care that they go out there and spend $300 million, because you know what's going to happen is we're going to get on them like the New York teams and the L.A. teams when they lose. And it's not sustainable in Cleveland. You can't just keep rebuilding a multi-billion dollar roster in the city of Cleveland. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, you don't have enough corporate partners. You know, attendance would go up. They would have that.
Well, I mean, I think we're a real good attendance team. I think you pack the place for the playoffs. It's a tough place to play. So I don't think the money really matters as far as, it's not translating for us. We're winning. We're a playoff hunt every single year. If I had that feeling for the Browns, I think I would explode. I don't even know what that would be like. And I got one more question before I go.
Yeah.
Is the sauce drawer at work, is that like give a penny, take a penny? Can I put one in one day and then take one out when I need it another day? How does that work, guys? Good morning. You have a good one.
Thank you very much.
I like that.
Call.
Think about all the different taco sauces you could throw in there, the chicken place sauces.
I like to
a lot of good ones.
I like to keep them separated. Taco sauces, Mexican sauces are the same. Chinese food sauces are that, like, that's a separate cubby. Yeah.
we don't really have a sauce drawer here. We do have a saltine shelf. That's about as close as we
the saltines. Oh, I know
Jeff
of all
turn
the things
this place
to have.
Into the doghouse diner if you can.
Which
I mean,
is
that's
terrible
what he does.
For on-air radio guys. Like the popcorn and
but
saltine drawer.
If you're trying
drawer.
To do a challenge, fit 10 in your mouth in a minute.
216-474-0092. When it comes to the winning, when it comes to the winning side of things, like the Guardians, again, they play well enough to make you care. They play well enough to make you angry because they get close. They don't get over the hump. And then, yeah, this was an unforeseen well, this was a foreseen circumstance, not unforeseen circumstance, no matter what anybody in Major League Baseball wants to tell you. You could start to see this coming here, that this model that they had had with Diamond Sports was not going to work out. However, like there will be an end to that. Okay, what do you do after that? What do you do? Can you get something done with your CBA? And we've talked about that to death. I just think that those who
do our fans care about that?
But
like,
no,
do they even
no,
the nitty gritty?
But the people sitting there saying they want them to spend $300 million or whatever, what you're accusing them of, I don't think they care about that at all. They're just not interested in baseball. That's all.
Well,
they're not interested in baseball.
I did have a lot of people say, could they spend another $40 million? And yeah, I wish. I'm just not sold that Blitzer is going to spend another $40 million. I have no evidence to back up that there is an owner ready to pounce on buying the Guardians at 1.7, which is what I think the Rays went. I know Minnesota said they're not selling now. But all these teams, like the Guardians, are around that spot. We have a work stoppage coming up around the corner. I'm not convinced anybody's going to shell out that money and then up the payroll without a local TV deal another $40 million. I just don't know that anybody exists like that. And I, you know, the other thing I would ask, like the caller did talk about, yeah, once you pay all those players, you know, you're in a different stratosphere in how you cheer for the team.
Mm-hmm.
I said this last week. How many teams' fan bases are thrilled with their baseball situation? Because the Mets fans are not right now.
How could they?
The Yankees fans are not.
Without a doubt,
so
not.
Do Guardians fans just assume if we spent and had the payroll of $280 million, $300 million.
They'd be happy?
We'd be happy?
No, you always hold it to a higher standard. You always hold it to a higher... How many max contracts do the Cavs have?
Well, technically three.
Three. And how happy were Cavs fans during the offseason? How many people just want Darius Garland gone right now? If I were to go, hey, you guys want to trade Darius Garland right now, how many people would say yes? They're not happy. They won 64 games last year. You just hold your team to a higher standard. That's supposed to be professional sports. The comparison, though, between the Browns and the Guardians, what you're saying, the $300 million thing, though, that's just not a baseball-first fan.
It's interesting, especially, like, we have all these cameras in the studio now, and so...
Yeah.
You can, you know...
We have lights in here now.
We do. Are we back to doing TV?
Well...
Please tell me I don't have to wear a jacket in here and a tie, because I'm done. I'm done wearing ties on TV. Can't stand it. Drives me. I mean, I know sometimes you have to, but I'm just not a tie guy. It's the one thing I got out of the pandemic that I kind of was like, okay, we're sticking with this.
Don't go tie. I can't recall the last time I wore a tie.
I'm done with ties. Jackets with button downs or golf shirts, I'm totally down with
it. Yeah, you look cool, you know.
Not as cool as you, Jeff Phelps.
No, the guys who wear those, you know, the open collar things with the jackets. And they walk in, you know, and they have their loafers and no socks. You know what that means?
What does that mean?
I have way too much money.
Oh, you think so?
Absolutely. Yeah,
if you had enough money, wouldn't you buy
those guys?
You'd buy a pair of socks.
Oh, you don't need them. You're cool. I'm not wearing socks. I have on a blazer and an open collared shirt. I'm loaded.
You concur?
I just want to know what I have to do to get no sock money.
See?
That's the world I want to live in.
See?
How does one gain no sock money?
Let me just tell you, after 3 days of regret of this, if you're going to put your shoes in the freezer from not wearing socks because your shoes smell now, don't tell the rest of your family that you're doing it and hide your shoes way in the back, because I am now 48 hours into the grief of letting everybody know that putting smelly shoes into a freezer and getting rid of the smell works.
Yeah,
but it hasn't worked for me because the
stench.
No. There's no stench. I'm telling you. It's just...
There was stench before you put it in there. Well, so where did that stench go? It went into your frozen foods.
No, it didn't.
It's in the ice in your freezer.
Add more barbecue sauce. You'll get over it.
Oh, that's true, too.
It's a valid point.
What would happen if I put my shoes in the freezer with dryer sheets in them?
We're going to...
I wonder.
Is that a bad idea?
I wonder if it turns into too much of a good thing. Then it would backfire on you.
We're going to talk about Jose Ramirez in a second here.
I will say I did get a lot of feedback about that, though. Other people agreed with me that they, They tried it, or they had done that before, and they were impressed by the fact that they had shoes that they really liked, but obviously it picked up some of the odor, and now that they put them in the freezer, it worked, but you know, you got to keep it away from the food. Or, as I was told, get your own freezer if you want to put your shoes in there.
Always liked your wife.
Yeah.
Anthony is in where, Andy?
Hi, Ty.
Anthony just hung up.
Oh, Anthony, you have let us down.
Frozen shoe talk.
Oh,
we scared Anthony away.
We have a
new
football coach. We have all these things going on. And
I asked you earlier. We were talking about this Guardians team, and I said,
oh, "Here he comes."
He's coming and back. I said, "They've done this without anything being really outstanding." And you corrected me accurately, and you said, "Nope, Jose Ramirez has been outstanding."
Do I get the music for being right?
You're right. You're right.
Oh my! And you said it twice.
No, you were right. You're absolutely right about that.
Hmm.
Before we
get to why I was right?
No, you weren't right.
Wait, I was right. I was right three times. You already said I was right.
All right, you were right.
All right, thank you.
You know, the thing about Jose Ramirez, and we're hearing a lot of stuff now about Jose and ranking, you know, all time in the Indians organization, Guardians organization, the Cleveland baseball team organization. In offensive categories and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, he's, if you look at what he did ever since he's been in the organization, he hit throughout the minor leagues. It took him a while to establish himself in the majors, but not that long. The thing that impresses me most about him, Andy.
Jeff.
He never looks like he's not busting his you-know-what on the field. And, man, is he consistently good. It's one thing to be good. It's another to be consistently good. And that's difficult to achieve, I think, at the major league level. I mean, season after season with this guy, he just continues to produce numbers and affect the way his team plays. You know, it's one thing to put up numbers. You see that with guys all the time. They put up stats in their individual base stats. The way Jose plays, I think, is infectious, and it really has an impact on the rest of the team. And that, to me, is what sets a superstar player apart from a star player. He impacts this team in a way that very few players in team history, I think, have actually impacted this team. And that's awesome.
You know why I think I like him even more? Because when he first got here, all we did was look at Lindor.
Oh, yeah.
Lindor. And it was like, oh, yeah, Jose Ramirez, that guy's okay. He's not bad. And look what's still here. And look at the numbers that he has. Second in home runs, third in extra base hits, fifth in total bases in franchise history, Jeff. That's not just like, and think about all of the great names that have played for this franchise.
Yeah.
Yeah, there were a lot of bad names as well that you forgot about, but there are a lot of great names that you do remember. And, you know, when you say second in home runs, third in extra base hits, fifth in total bases.
Mm. You know, he's driven in a lot of runs on teams that didn't score a lot of runs. That's impressive. This year, the RBI total down a little bit, but nobody's getting on base. We know that. That's been a big part of the situation. But he just keeps hitting, he keeps playing, and it's infectious. I looked up something the other day, and I thought, well, that's more impressive than you would expect it to be. And baseballreference.com is where I got this information. And, Dano, are you ready? Dan? Ready, Dan?
Oh, every day.
Here we go.
More
Dan, you ready?
More than the last.
Wins above replacement.
Wait, what? I was expecting to use some kind of archaic stat that, you know.
I know. Aren't you stunned?
A smidge?
Explain for everybody. Explain wins above replacement.
The best way to put it is it's a giant formula that spits out how many wins this player helps your team gain over getting a run-of-the-mill average player. Just know it works. You could go find the equation if you want, and you'll sit there and go, huh? Just know it works.
I'll leave out the numbers because I think people have a hard time relating to those. According to Baseball Reference, the wins above replacement, which is, you know, a biblical stat when it comes to baseball and how effective you are.
Mm-hmm.
Number one in franchise history. Napoleon Lajoie.
Oh, okay. I thought you'd say he was. I was like, what? Okay. Wow.
Nope.
Okay.
Number two is Tris Speaker.
I played in his little right, baseball.
So, I mean, these are Hall of Fame guys.
Cleveland Heights University.
Yeah. Number three is Bob Feller. Number four is Lou Boudreaux. Number five is Jose Ramirez. Think about that company. Napoleon Lajoie, Tris Speaker, Bob Feller, Lou Boudreaux, Jose Ramirez.
Checks out.
In franchise history. And he's followed by Stan Kovaleski, Earl Averill, who's was unbelievable, and then Kenny Lofton. That shows you where Jose is, I think, in the hierarchy of this franchise. I mean, this is an all-time great. He's Jim Thome's 10th. Jose's 5th.
Wow.
Now, had Jim finished his career here, might have been a different story.
Huh.
Instead, Jim ended up taking the tour of the major leagues and enjoyed it very much and did well. If Jim had stayed here, it might have been different. But that's where Jose is. He's 5th behind some of the most legendary names in baseball history. That's pretty really amazing. Cool. That's really cool.
I was thinking about some of those home run totals you were talking about. And, you know, when you think of Jim Thome, you think of a guy that would hit home runs, right? I mean, like, he just was your, especially when he got bigger. Not when he first started, but after he got bigger, he just looked like a prototypical Major League Baseball home run hitter, right?
Right.
I wouldn't say that Jose does.
Jose looks like anything but.
No, he looks like a guy that's going to get you a lot of extra base hits, which, by the way, he does, especially when you look at a guy that's got 387 doubles in his career. But he's only 57 home runs behind Thome. So that's a guaranteed statue. That's a guaranteed statue. If he can get those 57 home runs.
If he were, and we've heard, you know, he could play on any team and would, Tom Hamilton, Sammy
said it over the weekend.
Yeah, he'd have been a part of a starter on those teams.
And Hammy was so right. Yeah, he on any one of those teams in the 90s.
Now, I wonder where you'd play him on those teams in the 90s. I don't think he would have played third ahead of Jim. And I say that because I don't think Jim at the time was capable of playing anywhere else. Jim Thome.
Yeah.
They taught Jim first base when they signed Matt Williams, when they brought in Matt Williams.
And then Matt only stayed here for like one year.
Yeah. But Jim was a first baseman, and Jim was outgrowing third base anyway.
Sure.
But so you had Jim over there. At second, you had Carlos. After Carlos was gone, he could have played second for a while, but then you had Roberto Alomar.
Yeah, that wouldn't have happened.
So that wouldn't have worked. Maybe Jose would have been an outfielder, as he was here a little bit.
Well,
He played a little outfield here.
Isn't everyone an outfielder when they come to this team? I mean, at some point, everyone has the possibility.
They all begin as middle infielders, and then as you grow old, you find your role.
He wasn't going to beat out Omar at shortstop.
No, that wasn't happening.
So if he's not playing second...
And by the way, defensively?
If he's not playing second, third, or short, where is he going to play?
Outfield.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Yeah, I think he would have played second fielder or that. I
would have played left field.
Yeah, you know, it's just funny, and this total sidebar off this.
After Albert was gone.
If Johnny Mack could hit and wasn't behind Omar.
Oh, John McDonald.
He would have started for pretty much any other team in Major League Baseball every game. As Charlie Manuel once said, fastest hands I've ever seen.
We've had Joe Inglet on the show before.
Yeah.
And Joe played for the Indians and played for the Blue Jays and played for the Astros. And I was fortunate enough to be talking to Joe one day, and he was a middle infielder.
Yeah.
And we mentioned, you know, we were just talking about things, and I said, one day at spring training, I'm watching Omar and Johnny Mack take ground balls together. And
Did any get by either one of them?
No.
No.
And he said, as good as Omar's hands were, Johnny Mack's were better. Fast. I said, really? Anyway, yeah. It was unbelievable. And I just thought, wow. And that's coming from a guy who played the same position.
Right.
You know, that's the greatest compliment
you're
going to get.
He was trying to knock those guys out to play, right? He was towards the end of their era. Is that right?
I believe he was, yes.
End of their era, yeah.
Yeah.
Because I remember looking at his stats coming.
And it was just fun. But that's where Jose Ramirez is, folks. And I don't know that he's completely appreciated because this team hasn't won, you know, a World Series. But my God, he helped them get there. And I just think Like, it was easy to root for the teams of the 90s and latch onto all of those star players and the early 2000s as well. We need to appreciate Jose, and I think Guardian fans do. And that to me is a really big deal, and I'm glad they do. Because, man, is he's just flat out good is what he is. It's Baskin and Phillips right here on The Fan.
They're still 5 games above 500, 6.5 games back in the Central, and 1 game back in the wild card. Last night was the kind of game that I should, you know, you already know I hate playing the Marlins in August.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, we talked about that.
Put that bleep in June, put that bleep in May. Once you get to within the final 60 games, it should be your divisional opponents. It should be your league opponents, your in-league opponents, not the, and it's even the Braves. Even if the Braves were a great team, I don't care. They're a different division.
And it's actually, I told you, I really like this idea about you. I think it's a good one.
But
I think baseball would be smart to adopt it. They never will.
That only made last night more frustrating. On a game that I hate that you have to play, it was just, it was the comedy of errors type game where, and you knew, like, the second the Marcy kid hit the second home run of the night.
Yeah.
And I think he came into last night hitting below 300. He left hitting like 500.
Did you see he had his whole entire family there?
I did not.
Like,
but
it
that's
was
cool.
Like, it was like, it had to have been a whole, it was a whole
here?
Section. No, he's from Michigan. And so it was a section in right field, and there had to have been 35 people that were all like, they were all his family.
Well, now I hate that less.
Just losing his mind with every single at bat because he was just raking.
But when you already came back, as a matter of fact, I got the text from Mac.
You're like, no, I hate that less.
Well, no, I do.
It's true. I feel the same way.
Well, here's the thing. If you get tuned up by Aaron Judge, you're like, wait, you're bound to lose games getting tuned up by Aaron Judge.
Yeah.
When you get tuned up by a rookie who wasn't a top 100 prospect, like he's a nice prospect, but he's just kind of a guy. Yeah, it pisses you off really so much worse than when a superstar just tattoos you.
Yes, but in 39 big league at-bats now, he is hitting 436.
Yes, because of last night.
Again, it's been the entire stretch here. He's slugging 872.
He came into the game slugging like 750 or something
his
like that.
His family's got no chance to walk around as if they are basically related to Aaron Judge, but they get to for at least last night and in that moment.
But the fact that you climb back in that after Gavin gave you such a dud of a performance, and Arias comes up with a big hit.
Once Kwan had the home run in the first inning as like a response almost, and then you're able to tie it up, and then you get Gavin out of the game, and then you're like, all right, let's settle it down. Because I'd already kind of wiped that one away as a disappointing Guardians game and just kind of chalked it up, and then they rallied back, and then you just watch them implode.
And I can handle Allard struggling or giving up two. I can handle Gavin. Hell, Cesar Hernandez, who you claimed off waivers from, I think, Detroit, like a week ago. Two earned, that's fine. Matt Festa? Really beginning to festa here with Matt because I'm getting
he's not good at baseball. But it's funny how...
Can someone tell Steven Vogt that?
People are very, very angry every time they see Festa, and rightfully so. But it is interesting how he's become...
Because he's Fat Albers, and you're treating him like Brian Shaw in the damn eighth inning.
I'm with
you. But not good Brian Shaw, the old one.
The Festa thing doesn't make any sense to me. And he continues, and I've stuck up for Vogt in many ways, but they continue to put him in relatively high leverage situations, and it's just confusing. So then for the fan base, you're never like, oh, we see Festa when it's an 8-1 game and we need an innings eater like he should be. You see him in high leverage spots.
I'd like to point out that nobody called me on fat shaming Matt Albers, and you're all the problem. All right?
Well, no, you get to fat shame. I don't get to fat shame.
Well, no.
I can't fat shame.
Okay, I can fat shame. I can fat shame Jelly Roll when he's 500 pounds. When he's 299, I lose the fight. Right?
Wait. So
when my fatness is worse than their fatness, the fat shaming really becomes problematic. Because it's who the hell am I to talk? Who am I to say eat a salad, Matt Albers?
Nice try, Fatty.
I just want to know the rules that we're playing with here.
I think it makes sense.
So when you say someone that's skinnier than you but is still objectively fat, that's a no-go zone.
I think it's more problematic than if it's somebody that's fatter than I am.
But I still think you got carte blanche to call out a fatty. I can't do that. And I can't even say fatty that way, or else people get agitated with me.
I mean, now you're fat-splaining.
I'd have to be fat to be a fat splainer. Right?
No, you don't.
If mansplaining is I have to be a man and explaining things, wouldn't I have to be a fat to also fat splain?
I don't think so.
Okay.
If you were previously fat.
I've heard dumber things.
I think right now might be the fattest I've ever been. So you tell me if you think that's fat.
It's not the fattest you've ever been.
This is the fattest I've ever been. I'm 230 pounds, 230. I've never weighed more than 230.
You don't look 230. Isn't that a nice way to say that?
What do I look?
There have been times you've looked 230. You didn't look 230.
Well, maybe like 2 months ago. We're in the same breath.
You look maybe 215.
We're still, okay, thank you.
I'll say the nice thing.
That is a nice thing to say.
Yeah.
I can't fat shame. I've lost the ability to fat shame. If anything, I was going in the right direction to fat shame. I've lost that ability now.
This has always stopped skinny people from fat shaming.
No, Daryl does it, and it doesn't make it right.
Oh, no, those are just funny jokes.
From Daryl?
Sometimes.
Sometimes 20% of the time?
Fruit.
20, yeah. Maybe 20% of the time? You know this about me, though. I typically don't fat shame at all. So, like, Well, I'm a man explaining things sometimes, so I guess that falls under the category in your eyes. What? Meredith, by the way, came in between the break, was like, Nick doesn't understand how wrong he's getting mansplaining. Yeah. And I was like, I know.
So is she womansplaining?
Yeah. I loved it. I was like, tell him that when he comes in the door. Tell him.
Didn't have the courage to look me in the eyes and say it, huh?
I think she would have. I think we just ran out of time. I think she was going to, but we ran out of time.
So we also talked with Al Pawlowski about Gavin Williams' bad start last night and whether or not this could be linked to throwing too many damn pitches against Aaron, the no-hit attempt.
Whenever a pitcher comes off throwing a no-hitter or a perfect game or a near no-hitter, and I don't know why this is, but generally the next outing, they get hit. So I think it's just one of those things with baseball. I don't know if you get so close, and, you know, there's a lot of emotions that go into it. Throwing a no-hitter is something that some of the greatest pitchers ever never accomplished. You may never be that close again. So I think there's a lot of emotion that goes into it. And then when you don't get it and you get that close, it might just take something mentally to come back to, all right, got to start at square one here again, and maybe that's part of it. I don't think that, you know, it was a pitch count thing.
Now, this leads me to lead the floor, basically, for you to do I Was Right Radio.
Well, I want to know, do I have, and we're going to play a clip here from Gavin Williams. I want to know have the ability to do I Was Right Radio. After the no-hitter was blown, he should have been taken out of that game. He wasn't taken out of that game. I made a big stink about it because I care about pitch counts in a way that is not even arguably, it's unhealthy, the way that I care about pitch counts. Like, it's not a guessing game at this point. The 100 pitch count number is not, that's not just like they came up with a nice, even, clean number. We know when things start to go wonky and when things are damaging to the arm. And here's where I'll give the Guardians some credit, okay, in this whole discussion. Even though Stephen Vogt had to have removed him the moment that the no-hitter was done, and the fact that he didn't have anybody up because he was worried about superstition is fugazi, and it's an awful excuse by Stephen Vogt if he tried to use it. Gavin got 7 days of rest. They had the off day after the day that he blew it, and then they had this off day most recently as well. He had even more time to try to recover from this. But when you go 126, you just went about 26 too many, and Gavin said so himself afterwards.
I was all right. I've definitely felt a lot better in the past, but really no excuse. I decided to pitch, and that's all that matters. I mean, I threw 126 pitches last outing. I mean, the whole body was a little fatigued, but it's still no excuse. I went out there and pitched no matter what. I should have done better than what I did.
All right.
The fact that he's admitting it, that he's a little fatigued and that the 126 was a stress, you compromised one game to try to go ahead and what? I get when you want to go for a no-hitter, but the moment the no-hitter's done, he had to be out of that game.
All right, these two things cannot be true at the same time. Either you get to be right on this and going that many pitches in is borderline reckless by the Guardians. And again, it's not about the 100, it's about not having a bullpen arm up the second that the no-hitter was over.
Right, and letting him pitch after the no-hitter was
just
already
just want to make sure Mitch wasn't going to pull that so then they could have a different conversation about what we said tomorrow.
Thank you for
morning.
That. He still probably will anyway, but thank you for that.
Okay, so that it's either that or Gavin was making an excuse. And I don't think he was making an excuse.
I don't think Gavin was making an excuse. It seemed like he was trying everything in his power to not bring up the idea that he was fatigued. And then he's like, yeah, okay, all right, I was fatigued.
Yeah, and by the way, I don't like it. I don't think, like, if a player says that, because I think sometimes in baseball we massively overreact when a guy admits anything that isn't the most pro team ever. It's very logical that the deepest you've pitched into a game for a very long time, this late into the season,
and the most
made
pitches,
you fatigued.
And the most pitches anyone's thrown in baseball this year.
Yeah. Now, if this thing becomes, because he had a short outing last night, if this thing becomes something we're talking about two or three starts from now, that's when I think, not do you just get to do I was right, but you get to do I am raging radio.
Oh, that's my favorite type of radio.
Not in this case. We don't want that.
No, I don't want to be right in this instance. Yeah, I'll take being. Well, this is it right here anyway.
Gavin has ace potential.
This alone substantiates the anger that I had the day after or the day of that he didn't get the job done. Everything else moving forward just gets me more and more enraged and more angry. But this alone, him telling you how fatigued he was when they gave you the extra days off and everything, is part of the reason why we lost it and part of the reason why Stephen Vogt, you had to be better in that moment.
Gavin Williams admits he was a little fatigued going all the way back to his previous start where he went 120-plus pitches in the no-hit attempt. Are you buying into JP's ability to do I Was Right radio? And it's one of the best pleas you'll ever hear, even if it's misguided. In 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.